effectively, compilers can generate really, really, really good code. Optimizers just seem to absolutely love this this style of doing things. That's it's kind of what I've discovered is that this is just amazing for performance.
Welcome to ADSP, the podcast, episode 224, recorded on February 17th, 2025. My name is Connor, and today with my co-host Ben, we continue our conversation with Tristan Brindle. In today's episode, we chat about updates in Tristan's library Flux, internal iteration versus external iteration, and more. Now we're starting episode 224, and we haven't even talked about Flux. So a part of the goal was to bring Tristan on, because I mean, it's been a while now, but back in August, I told this story twice on the podcast. We met up a couple times. Taylor Swift delayed us meeting up by an hour or so at one point because she was performing at Wembley. And I said at that point that we were going to have you back on, get some updates about Flux. And then I had some follow-up questions about fully understanding the internal iteration model of Flux, because I actually don't think I tweeted this. I know it's public somewhere, and that somewhere is for sure in the PDF slide deck of the talk that I gave at C++ Under the Sea, which was called Fusion Arrays and CPU versus GPU, something like that. It was a bunch of things because I couldn't figure out a good title, so I just put some commas in between it. In there, it shows a highlight of rankings of a bunch of different quote-unquote backends to this tool I wrote with three different C++ quote-unquote libraries. Flux is one of them. Range V3 is another one. And then the standard C++ 20, 23 ranges. And then Swift's there. Rust is there. There's a few different GPU backends like CuPy, CUDA Thrust, etc. There's a few others. And at least on the lower end of the sizes that I tested, so I think that was like 1,000 elements in vectors up to 100,000. Flux, hands down, won in every single one. So it beat ranges, Woo-hoo! It beat range V3, it beat Swift, it beat Rust. I mean, the other ranges implementations were right behind Flux. But this echoes, I mean, you gave a lightning talk at, I want to say, C++ North 2024, which was called Filtering Fast with Flux, something like that.
Faster Filtering with Flux, I think it was, yeah.
Faster Filtering with Flux, where it was a 5-minute lightning talk, link in the show notes, and you showed how this double dereference issue can get in the way of compilers optimizing code, what you could write with a hand-rolled for loop. Anyways, I'm going to throw it over to you. So I've got questions, but first, give us an update. For folks that haven't listened to episode 126 and 127, where I think wasn't the last time you were on, but it was the last time you were on that we talked about Flux, because I think you came on in between to do the one algorithm to rule them all episode at some point, I think.
I was supposed to argue with Ben, and then we ended up agreeing about, yes.
So yeah, what's the state of Flux? What are the updates? And then we can get to...
What's the state of Flux? That's a great... That's what I should call like the updates, right? The state of Flux. Why didn't I think of that?
I was going to say, and also too, give a little like a summary of just what the, I mean, I've compared it to ranges already, so maybe people have an idea, but in case they started listening since then, and this is the first time they're hearing about Flux, okay. Maybe give them just a little background so that we're not.
Okay. So Flux is a library for doing what we might call collection orientated programming or sequence orientated programming, right? So it's similar in spirit to things like C++ 20 ranges, range V3, the Rust iterator library, the like Python iter tools, D ranges, all those sorts of things. So the idea is that you have algorithms that operate on sequences, as we call them in Flux, and you can have sequence adapters that you can chain together to build up kind of a view of your data, and then call some algorithm that operates on that data. So, as I say, this is pretty much every language. I think you can do this sort of thing. So, Flux is kind of an alternative to C++ 20 ranges. The way it works is a little bit different because it doesn't use STL iterators. So standard ranges. They're built on iterators that are effectively a generalization of pointers. Raw pointers are like the most general or sort of the most powerful kind of iterators. They're contiguous iterators. And the STL takes these and kind of generalizes backwards to kind of bidirectional iterators and forward iterators and eventually input iterators. That's you can only have single pass. Flux, rather than using pointers, takes the idea of indices and generalizes backwards from there. So slightly different approach, but we end up being kind of, we can do the same things as you can do with ranges, just the way that you do them is slightly different. And the goal with this is because, or was originally anyway, that being pointer-based indices, iterators, STL iterators, share the same downsides as pointers in that they can quite easily be invalidated, they can quite easily end up dangling. It's just not a very safe abstraction. Whereas with indices, or the generalized version, we call them cursors in Flux, rather than like an iterator can advance itself, it can dereference itself, right? It's a, whereas a cursor just purely represents a position in some sequence. And in order to advance the cursor, you have to have the sequence object available to say, please, will you give me the next position after this? Or in order to retrieve the value corresponding to that position, you have to ask the sequence, please, will you give me, you know, read the cursor position and give me that value. So it means that if you ever end up with a dangling cursor, you know, you're holding onto the cursor and the sequence has vanished, you know, it's perfectly safe because there is literally nothing you can do with this cursor because, you know, you can't just try and dereference it like you would be able to with a dangling iterator. So the initial goal of Flux, what I set out to do, was to, you know, do something that's pretty much the same as ranges, but less prone to dangerous dangling things.
I think actually that's one of the titles you gave, I think, the same talk a couple different times in 2023. Once at C++ on C, once at C++ North, I think at CPP Con, and I think the C++ on C one, it retitled the talk to a safer, there's the safe is in the title, even though the actual title of the talk is Iteration Revisited. So you might see different titled talks, but they're all versions of the same one. And so Flux is a safer version, but as I mentioned before, it ends up performance-wise beating ranges and range v3. And in the episode 126 discussion, we talked about these two different models of internal iteration and external iteration. And to this day, I don't think I've fully grasped what the difference is. And I actually, in preparation, because I went and rewatched that talk, I went and re-listened to the episode. I didn't rewatch Barry Revzin's talk, which we'll also link. He's given it a couple times where he compares the various models across programming languages, D, Swift, C++, C#, Python, etc. But now we live in the age of LLMs. And so I figured I'll go, they got these reasoning models. I'm not sure if this is 03 or 01 mini on ChatGPT, but I went and I asked, I said, explain internal iteration as it exists in libraries like C++ Flux and also the issue of double dereference. And this is what it said. It reasoned for 18 seconds. That's a reasonable amount of time for me to wait. It says, in many traditional C++ designs, you iterate over containers or ranges using external iteration. That is, you write a loop that pulls values out via iterators. With internal iteration, on the other hand, you pass a function, often a lambda, to an algorithm, and the algorithm internally, in quotations, iterates over the data, applying your function to each element. This means control. The library's algorithm controls the loop rather than the caller. Optimization. The library can optimize the iteration process, potentially fusing multiple operations together, a technique often called loop fusion, and even parallelizing work, and abstraction. Users work at a higher level of abstraction. You chain operations together without managing the low-level mechanics of looping. So before I throw this over to you, and we'll ignore the double dereference explanation answer that it gave us, my first thought when I hear this is, okay, I mean, I agree with this loop fusion thing, but explaining it as like passing higher order functions to these operations and letting the algorithms manage the iteration, my first thought is like, that's what doesn't like ranges. You like the, if I call a, you know, a std colon colon views colon colon transform versus a flux dot map, you're passing a lambda to both of those. So like that explanation of handing over this kind of callback that then enables the algorithms or the adapters to control the iteration doesn't fully check out. I did ask a follow-up question that said, okay, so what does C++ ranges and range v3 use? And it did say this uses external iteration because you can use this with for loops. Where, and then I asked, well, can you not use Flux with for loops? And it says typically no, you can't. So anyways, how much of that is right and wrong? And where it's wrong, please elaborate and correct.
Okay, right. So it is correct, apart from the bit about Flux not using external iteration. So Flux, the cursor model that I described, is a form of external iteration. So what we mean by that is that you have some, or typically you have some sort of like external, some sort of object that represents your iteration state, and then you can, as the caller, you can request like the next value of the sequence. So typically we will call this thing, this state, like an iterator, right? So this is the way that it works in C++. In Flux, our iteration state is this cursor object. You know, Python, almost all languages, in fact, you use these external, you know, this external iteration model. But as an optimization, and at the moment, we might get into how I'm planning to change things, but at the moment, it's purely an optimization in Flux, is that we can turn this around for certain algorithms, and we can, just as you described it, we can instead say to the sequence, okay, here is a function. I want you, please, to call this function for like every one of your elements. And it turns out that if by turning things inside out like that, instead of kind of requesting elements one at a time, by saying, here is a function, please, will you do the iteration for me? Effectively, compilers can generate really, really, really good code. Optimizers just seem to absolutely love this this style of doing things. That's it's kind of what I've discovered, is that this is just amazing for performance.
So wait, just to clarify, so you're saying actually that Flux doesn't use internal iteration? It's
No, it does. It uses it as an optimization. So if you're doing like a basic for each algorithm, it will attempt, if it can, it will attempt to use an internal iteration code path. If it can't do that, if one of your adapters or your source doesn't support internal iteration, it will use regular external iteration using cursors.
Interesting. So if it can, it internally iterates. If it can't, it externally iterates.
That is the current situation.
And so how is that? I mean, not that we want to get into implementation details, but like, what does that look like from an implement? Because I actually took a look at like the map adapter, but I don't know. It's a lot of templates and std invokes and std forwards, and it's hard to make sense of, like, you know, how does it determine? Is it just basically like every single one of the adapters is tagged with like whether or not it can do this, and it dispatches based on that or something? Or
okay, so imagine that. There's a function called, well, don't have to imagine, because there's a function called for each, mm-hmm. right? And you can write the for each algorithm, which is, you know, in terms of the of cursors, you just say, okay, well, give me a cursor to the start, like the start cursor, and while it's not equal to the end, I'm going to read a value, I'm going to call the function, the given function with that value, I'm going to increment the cursor, and then eventually it's equal to the end position, and then we finish. Okay, so that is a, like, just how we write a for each in terms of external iteration. However, you could also, and this is the way we do it, allow sequences to provide a specialization of the for each algorithm. So something like a vector, or a C++ range, you could just use a for loop, like a language for loop, and within this loop you would call the function. And then you think about, well, okay, what about a map adapter? Can we provide a specialization of for each on a map adapter? And the answer is yes, we can. So what we do is we take the mapping function, and we apply that first, so we get the adapted value, and then we pass that adapted value to the user called functions. So we can compose mapping and filtering inside of this for each. And the way that this works, and it's quite hard to describe, it's much easier if you can sort of see it in code, the way that these lambdas all sort of nest inside each other, but they're all completely transparent to the compiler, and it can just see right through them and do an amazing job of optimization, because we can specialize this for each function. And that's sort of at the heart of what we mean by internal iteration. And so, yeah, in terms of algorithms, pretty much anything that is a fold or a scan can end up using internal iteration. Anything that where you begin at the beginning of a sequence and run linearly until a certain point can almost always be written in terms of internal iteration. And that is the vast majority of things people tend to do with sequences. So it ends up... like I said, the goal with Flux really was to have something that was safer than the status quo, but it turns out that most people have noticed that it also, because of this internal iteration, optimization ends up generating really good code as well. So yes.
So is there this technique of providing specializations, is there a reason this can't be applied to standard ranges?
It's could be, right? So, in fact, there was a proposal by Jonathan Mueller and Barry Resin. I can't remember the paper number. We'll have to look it up. But there was a proposal for exactly this kind of thing. So, yeah, it didn't succeed because it kind of, I think it was probably a little bit too ambitious for initially, but it could, in theory, be applied to ranges as well.
So you're saying the reason it failed wasn't technical, it was just that they were trying to land too much stuff at once?
It's a while since I read it, but I think they were kind of proposing to the changes to the way range for loops work and things like that, probably made people a bit nervous. I can't remember the
not necessarily just touching library stuff, like touching language stuff as well.
Interesting.
So there's nothing actually that
In principle, we could have the ranges algorithms perform this optimization as well.
Yeah, I do know that there. I mean, I don't really pay attention to it, but I do know there's like a year long filter view saga happening right now where I see talks from people about the brokenness and. I don't follow the committee papers closely anymore, but I do know at some point papers were being written. I don't really know what the status of that stuff is.
Of course, this kind of thing, it's interesting you can say we can apply that to standard ranges, because this kind of thing always, the question in the back of my mind whenever we talk about things like this is the question of did we standardize something too early, right? Ranges got standardized with several implementations, but without this internal iteration design, it hadn't been discovered yet, maybe, And so the question to ask is, like, which doors have we closed by standardizing as early as that? Would it have been worth waiting? Do you have thoughts on that?
I mean, people have kind of said, well, would you propose Flux for standardization? I was like, well, no, because it's the overlap with ranges is too much. But on the other hand, Flux wouldn't exist without ranges, without kind of what I learned from studying that. So it's like you can always wait for the next thing, because I have changes I now want to make to Flux, which because I think I can do it better, and you can always, there's always a way to do something better, right? There's always a next thing. So at some point you've got to go, well, let's put this in there. So,
well, I mean, technically there's an argument that you don't have to, like if we had a better story for package management, arguably it would have been range V2, range V3, then Flux, Flux 2, and then you can just reach for stuff easily. Right. But the problem is that unless if you, have your build system configured or worked for a company like, all the major companies have some solution for this, right? It's not as easy as going cargo install whatever for your library. Like these days, I think I've said this on this podcast. I just do the like fetch command and make scripts. And like, I just, you know, every single time I have a new project, I copy my make file and I just pull from the latest, whatever, GitHub repo. I don't use any of the package repo. Like, what are they?
Right.
The frog has one, the frog company Conan.
JFrog.
Thank you. And then there's VC package. So like, right. I don't use any of that stuff. I just point at GitHub repos, and luckily almost all of the libraries that I want to use.
CMake's has recent versions of CMake have this fetch content, which I found to be pretty good for just like.
I use CPM, which is projects. A wrapper around fetch content.
Someone told me about that recently and said I should switch to CPM. But the thing is, once you have something that works, and all you have to do is change a GitHub URL.
Yeah.
Well, you should switch to CPM because it's a wrapper around fetch content, because it works the same way. It's just a better API. It's just easier.
All right,
it has folks. All the things you like, I think, is what I'm saying.
Next time we record, I will report back. Although I don't even know if there's any C++ projects that I actively am working on. Mostly these days I'm in Python land. But yeah, I mean, so anyways, back to the, you know, at some point you have to put it in to the standard, arguably, you know.
Well, yeah, exactly. Do you?
Yeah, if we had a better story for it.
And this is very much like, there's lots of things going into the standard, and people have different opinions about whether they should, maybe. Like the poster child for this maybe is formatting, right? Most of the people I talk to are probably sticking with libfmt, even though std format exists. Libfmt is better featured, and it's what they were already using, and you would probably, you know, therefore they want to stick with it, and they want to, and it's still being developed, still being maintained, and it's very stable and nice. Now, the counter argument, of course, that always gets brought up is, well, what about the regulated industries that where regulation is a big deal and they can regulate against the standard, but regulating against third party is a big deal, right? Expensive or whatever. So I don't know what the answer there is, but what I do know is that almost everyone I talk to wanted to use libfmt rather than std format.
Interesting.
I think in the particular example of format, like, that is important enough. Like, we should be able to have a good way of just printing stuff out
that comes with the
language. That particular example, I think, yeah, that's something that's reasonable for the standard library. However, there are other things that linear algebra being a recent example that I'm not sure for me personally whether I think that's
Senders receivers is one for me. Like, I've implemented senders receivers, a version of them. I don't know if what's being standardized will fit all my use cases. I hope it will. I believe that the people working on it want it to, but I think with the best will in the world, it might take another decade before it supports all the use cases required. Right? So, in the case of libfmt, I agree that we should have good ways to standardly format things. The extra benefit that libfmt provides for me is largely in the constexpr space. And this is something where the standard continually disappoints me. We still standardize things without making them properly constexpr.
Yeah.
I think that might be a tactic now. Like that is just a process, right? First we standardize something, then we make it constexpr. In some cases, maybe not in other cases, but it's almost always disappointing when you come up against something that you want to use at compile time, and to all intents and purposes, it should be usable at compile time. And the only reason it isn't is that it was not standardized with that constexpr keyword in front. It still happens.
Yeah. Speaking of the time that the committee spends on stuff that arguably I would prefer if they just had like a good package management story, then I feel like at least 50% of the stuff the committee spends time on trying to get into the standard, we could just be like, oh, you know, modulo the regulatory, you know, companies that have to deal with that stuff. But And then if you took all that extra time and put it towards like language, some types, like a nice tuple, a nice language variant and pattern matching, like that is, that was actually a question I was going to ask you. Tristan, I asked, Phil Nash this at C++ Under the Sea. I said there was a project that I wanted to build, that for reasons, would have been easier to do in C++. And I said, I want to use Flux, but like, it's just so hard for me coming from languages now that all have really nice, you know, algebraic data types and sum types and pattern matching to like come back to like library variant land and, you know, is alternative. It's just, it's so cumbersome. And I said, what's your suggestion? Yeah. If I want like that experience in C++, you know, you're someone who's been doing this for a while. And his answer was use Swift. So what is there, and I guess I can open this up to you, Ben. Like, what is the best experience in C++ if I want to do some kind of functional programming-esque, so either reaching for ranges or range V3 or Flux, but then I want the sum type pattern matching that almost all languages these days have. Is just the answer is there is no good solution currently and I have to wait for a future standard until pattern matching is standard, or is there?
You're asking me? I'm not sure I'm the best person to ask.
I think Circle has pattern matching.
I did actually
right?
consider going to Circle and then programming in like a C++ variant that has, you know, uses choice types and uses pattern matching, but then like you're not programming in not just like a dialect, but I would almost argue like a different language at that point. Right. Cause you can't then go to a GCC or Clang and it's not going to work. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I think, I mean, there's been a pattern matching proposal, that's been in flight for a long time,
for years.
Michael Park. But
it looks like it's just going to
miss the boat. Yeah.
Oh, it's for C++ breaking 26. News, folks. Breaking news. C++ 26. Looking like it won't. We don't know for sure. I mean, has the dust settled? I think the last meeting was the...
It's supposed to be feature complete. It's just the reason I'm wavering is because I can't remember off the top of my head whether... I'm pretty sure. Let me just see if I can find the...
Yeah, I think in the last week meeting, it looks like pattern matching is going to miss 26.
And I honestly, too, like even pattern matching, it would make it nicer. But really, you need the language support, in my opinion, to really get the full first-class experience. I mean, I was talking to Sean Baxter the other day about, you know, he was asking me if there was some new language on the block, what are the things that you would want to support array programming? And I said, forget array programming. I just need, because he said it needs to be like a C++-like language. And I was like, I need sum types and pattern matching. He's like, oh, Circle already has that. So, you know, choose another feature. And I was like, well, C++ doesn't have it, so... sorry, Tristan, you were going to say something.
I was just going to say, I found it. There's a thing here. It said pattern matching did not get consensus, but was extremely close. Attendees felt that it wasn't quite ready for C++ 26.
So, interesting. I wonder what that means, like with more details. It was extremely close, but didn't make it in. In terms of like just people didn't agree on the design. Oh well, I mean, it is coming at some point.
I don't know if it's the. I don't know if we can say it's the design at this point, but something. I don't know. I wasn't at the meeting.
Yeah, this is why to be in the inner circle, you got to be at the meetings in order to. I mean, I'm sure. I guess CPPcast hasn't come out with an episode in a while, but usually Phil and Timur they'll have someone on to talk about the committee meeting.
I think Timur's been so busy with the contract stuff because he's, you know, that's his his thing. So he's probably been too busy being part of the action to like do the podcast about the action, if you see what I mean.
Be sure to check the show notes either in your podcast app or at adsppodcast.com for links to anything we mentioned in today's episode, as well as a link to a GitHub discussion where you can leave thoughts, comments, and questions. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed and have a great day.
I am the anti-brace.